All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. Just got home from kids' baseball practice and connected with Josh over social media here. And he's running the Chase and Tails Outdoors Instagram page. If you guys haven't seen it, you should go check it out. He's definitely a guy hunting on the coast, which is something that always connects with me because I live on the coast in Washington. And anyway, man, how you doing tonight?
Doing pretty well. So anyway, my name is Josh Dishman. I run Chase and Tails Outdoors, where blacktail is literally my passion. But my name's what it says, chase and tails, I'll chase anything. I am married, so that one's out of the question. But anyway, yeah, we love chasing spring bears. You name it, we like to hunt it.
Yeah, right on, man. Yeah, I drew an Oregon spring bear tag, and I did a podcast with Joshua Hubbs. I think it was about 10 or 15 episodes ago. And if I remember right, he had mentioned you about Oregon. I'm not sure if you guys know each other personally or exactly kind of how
just through Instagram and stuff. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. As soon as I
mentioned Oregon, he's like, oh man, you gotta talk to this guy. You gotta talk. It's like, you know, that's funny. I've been following him on Instagram for a couple of years, and that's quite the coincidence.
Yeah. Everybody's always saying, you know, oh, talk to Josh. I'm just an average guy that loves to hunt. I mean, get me out in the dirt road past the concrete jungle. That's where I belong.
Yeah, I hear you there, man. I work up north of, I live in a little town kind of down by Chehalis area. And not many people, I guess, know this little town, but I drive up to Seattle a lot for work. So I appreciate you getting out of that area. Definitely love being in the woods.
Where I live. I live in a little town, five minutes from my house. I'm on a dirt road. So, I mean, I can't beat it.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of the same thing. My neighborhood's all gravel roads, driveways, gravel. got a little bit of property, some privacy. And people are like, man, I can't believe you drive that far to work every day. And I'm like, you know what? Like when I get home, it's peaceful. There's no one looking. I can't see another house besides my neighbor, which is my mom. She's got 5 acres next door. So I can't complain about that. And yeah, can step out my front porch and shoot my bow 100 yards in my front yard. And not that I'm going to shoot an animal that far, but it's fun to practice out that far. And anyway, I hear you there, man. It's nice to get out of the concrete jungle for sure. But, you know, I was thinking we'd start talking about spring bear, but I can't help myself with wanting to start with the blacktail stuff. I've noticed on your page that you guys have knocked down some exceptional blacktail bucks. And I was just chatting last night with another guy, Northwest Pursuit, and he's a Washington guy as well. And we both agreed that we thought that, or I still feel this way and probably will forever, that killing a mature blacktail buck is, I'd probably argue with anybody, that's like one of the hardest things to do out there in the woods. So, I guess let's start with like, how'd you get into that blacktail hunting? Was it as a kid or
I've grown up doing it my whole life. You know, I wasn't raised around my dad or anything, but my cousins and my uncles, they all took me in whenever I was young and they hunted all their lives and everything. And I just, then at 12, I shot a 4-point and then so on and so forth. It just kept going. And to me, you could stick a monster bull and a 150-inch blacktail out there. I'll shoot the blacktail any day of the week. For some reason, some people think I'm crazy, but that's just me.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, if you're passionate about it, it doesn't really matter if it makes sense to anybody else, right? So.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just the big wow factor. They're more camouflaged than an elk, so you got to look twice as hard. I mean, here lately, you know, we've been getting really off the beaten path and putting boots on the ground to kill some big mature bucks, but they're still out there. You just kind of have to work a little bit for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, I guess that makes it more gratifying, right? When you find a big mature one, you know, there's a story there. If you've worked for it and you spent a couple weeks or a couple months watching a buck or, you know, however it goes down, but, I don't know what it is about. It's like when I go out of state to hunt Idaho or wherever it may be, there's something about like just the story, you know, that I appreciate. Like, I guess shooting a trail buck every once in a while is kind of fun, but I feel like it's much more gratifying and I feel way more fulfilled when I have to work for it. If it's six or seven, eight, nine days, whatever it may be, you know, it's just, it feels that much better when you notch the tag at that point.
Absolutely. Yeah. The, the buck I shot 2 years ago, 21 inch wide Forking Horn. I think I shot him at 1 o'clock, and I've shot a lot of blacktail, and not once have I ever had to make three trips packing one out.
And wow.
This thing literally took three trips. My buddy Brandon Anderson, he showed up and helped me with the last trip. But by the time I got done at like one something, or shooting it at one something, I think I finally got back to the truck at 10:30 at night with the last trip.
Wow. So did you cape that buck out and bring the hide out with you, or was that just
me? I did. I got it mounted. It's hanging in the living room.
Nice. That's awesome.
I got to find room in here to put it.
Yeah, I see all those heads behind you. It's one of the first things I noticed when you hopped on. I was like, man, he's put some animals on the ground.
My wife, we had another room in our master bedroom. It was smaller, but she's like, well, now that our son's moved out, you know, why don't you move your stuff into one of the bedrooms? So I was like, okay. Well, now this room's too small. So I told her I'm going to punch a hole through to the other bedroom. She doesn't think that's a good idea.
That's funny. So let me ask you, I guess maybe you don't have a specific answer, but what do you find yourself, or what do you kind of fall back on when you're searching for those upper age class blacktails? Are you looking for like specific reprod, you know, 4 and 5 year old reprod? Or are you looking for like some big heavy timber? Are you chasing them maybe more up in like the high country, broken up, burnt stuff? Or do you just kind of search all over the place?
So I'm kind of all over the map, but we did have a big burn down here 4 years ago, and I've been hunting that burn. It seems to be producing big animals. I mean, like I say, that one buck was 200 pounds on the hoof for a blacktail. That's pretty, you know, pretty rare. So I've been, you know, like diving off into some absolute shitholes. I mean, that's where they're going to be. I mean,
yeah,
go where no man wants to wander. That's where I go.
Yeah. Yeah. How about weather? One thing I've noticed in Washington, and I'll be honest, ever since I started hunting more out of state, I haven't spent a ton of time hunting blacktails. Like, not like I used to hunt them all the time late season. But one thing I noticed when I spent a lot of time hunting them was you wanted to be out on like a really windy, rainy day. They seem to be more on the hoof at that point. And I don't know if it's because they all the noise kind of had them a little bit more alert, but man, trying to find a blacktail buck in even November on a halfway stormy day, they just don't seem to move. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like I always recommend to everybody, find the most shittiest day and get out there, because deer are always so on edge anyway. When you get all that water dropping in the timber and everything, you know, they got to get up and move around, because they always think something's chasing after them or something. But yeah, the windiest, shittiest days, I'm out there every day, but yeah, I prefer the bad weather for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're just kind of seeing the similar traits, I guess it sounds like. So, do you do any out of state trips, or are you doing mostly all your hunting in Oregon, or do you apply anywhere out west?
I did a hunt in Wyoming. It was probably 3-4 years ago. Me and my buddy went over there to hunt mule deer and antelope. And, you know, in Oregon, it takes half of your life to draw an antelope tag. So I just like, heck with it, I'll draw one in Eastern Oregon, Wyoming, you know, within a couple of years. So we did that. It was a blast. But I'll tell you what, the mule deer hunt was probably the hardest hunt I've ever done in my life. I mean, there was every hunt going on under the sun. I mean, there was moose hunting, there was antelope hunting, there was mule deer hunting, there was, I mean, anything you could possibly hunt in Wyoming, it was going on in that unit. I've never seen so many people in my life.
Really?
Yeah. I think after we went over there for 2 weeks, and I think we stayed a week and a half. And the first day I shot my antelope, so the rest of it was mule deer hunting. But I think we put 78 miles on the boots to find two little Forking Horns at the end.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's not the typical story I get when I hear someone going to Wyoming. I usually hear it was the best hunt of their life. That's interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, it was.
Well, how many years ago was that?
That would have been, I think, 3 years ago. So
was that the year they had the really, really hard winter, do you know, or was it?
It could have been a guy that I know. He goes over there and hunts all the time. He's like, hey, I go to this unit. So we waited and we drew it. I mean, going, you know, flying somewhere blind is kind of the hard part anyway. It's all a learning process, but we definitely weren't learning the right way.
Yeah.
I mean, we hiked, you know, we did a lot of sage hunting. We went up into the Medicine Bow National Forest, and you know, we got on some of those long ridges in the timber, and I told my buddy, I said, let's just try to get away from people. We'll hike out these long ridges and maybe get out the end, you know. So we had hiked 3 or 4 miles, get out there, and then pretty soon you look around, it's like a pumpkin patch. I think everybody else had the same idea, you know.
Yeah. Huh. Man, that's interesting. I've heard that everybody that lives in Wyoming hunts, but there's not that many people that live in Wyoming, so there's plenty of space. And but I haven't heard that it's been a struggle to find, you know, good sized bucks and, you know, find some space to yourself. So that's interesting.
The biggest bucks we did see were standing in the highway.
Go figure. <Yeah. laughs> Wow.
But I definitely recommend going there antelope hunting. That's for sure. It was a blast.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a buddy at work who I think he has 2 points for Wyoming, and his brother lives over east somewhere, and they're gonna meet up and do a antelope trip over there in Wyoming this year. So yeah. I'm interested to see how his hunt goes.
Yeah, it's a blast. I'll definitely definitely do it again.
So other than Wyoming, are you applying for any points or building points anywhere else?
No, not really. I kind of stick around Oregon, so I also do a veteran hunt usually. This year, well, actually, I'm fibbing a little bit. We are going to Colorado this year to do a second season rifle hunt with a guy that I do the hunt league through, Jared. He invited us over there to do a 9-mile backcountry hunt. So I've been busting out some stairs trying to get this fat boy in shape.
are you guys taking any animals in, or are you guys just going in backpacks?
All backpacks.
Oh man, that's gonna be a brutal hike in there.
So yeah, it's he said most of it's about 2,000 feet elevation gain and all that. So I don't know, I got till October, so time to put in the work.
I hear you there. This year's been super crazy for me, been really busy with the normally I'm busy, but my daughter's got soccer Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5:30 to 7:30. So like right when I get home from work, I'm going straight to soccer practice or meeting the family at soccer practice. And then my wife volunteered me to coach my son's baseball team when I was at work. So I got signed up for that. And that's Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 5:30 to 7:30 on the weekdays, and then 9 to 11 on Saturday morning. So normally I'm working out a lot more and running a lot more. And man, I'm leaving for a spring bear trip, backcountry, backpack hunt. And I'm nervous that I'm going to get my butt kicked. I think my joints are going to be sore and I'm going to be beat up a little more than normal. But my brother's been working out like crazy, so I keep telling him that I'm going to put my backpack on his and I'll meet him at the top.
We're going with, I think 4 of us are going. And I told him, I said, I may be last, but by God, you ain't going to have to call search and rescue.
Hey, as long as you get there, right? It doesn't matter when.
That's right.
Yeah. So let me ask you a little bit about this Oregon spring bear. So I've hunted Oregon twice for spring bear, and we've seen bears on every trip. You know, every year we've gone down, we found bears. But usually we hunt Idaho first. So we've been fortunate to fill some bear tags in Idaho each year. So we've been a little bit more selective, I guess, in Oregon. I'm more of the mindset on bears, like a bear's a bear to me. I just want to take a predator off the mountain. I'm not super picky, and I'm also not really good at judging them either. So that's kind of part of the problem, to be honest with you. But I haven't put a tag on a spring bear in Oregon yet. So are there any tips or any tactics that you would be willing to share with the audience about have you been able to find them, areas you look for them, and stuff like that?
So a lot of, I mean, everybody's got Onyx map, but a lot of the stuff I do hunt south facing slopes, a lot of bluffy, rocky stuff with, you know, pretty much timber surrounding it. That's where I typically find my, a lot of people around here, they'll find them in bare units with nothing even growing in it. And I'm not that lucky, but, you know, but yeah, a lot of it's south facing slopes, just grassy hillsides, you know, especially in the spring. The way our fire danger and everything happens in Oregon now, they pretty much shut the fall season down because they shut the woods down, which is a bummer. Because to me, they're just creating a bear sanctuary.
Yeah.
I mean, they honestly, in the month of August, you know, when me and my buddy would go out, we'd see anywhere from 50 to 60 bears in the month of August.
And wow.
Now you can't do that because in Oregon, we're allowed 3 bear tags, 1 spring bear tag and 2 fall. But now basically they're shutting down the fall, which I think they should at least allow us to use our Southwest additional for another spring bear tag to me. But
yeah, yeah, that would make sense.
They're out of control in Oregon, in my honest opinion. But
yeah. Well, I'm sure the timber companies would probably appreciate that as well, to remove some of the bear damage to all the logging country. It's crazy though. It seems like, you know, you and I, you know, experience this a lot living on the coast, but our lovely politicians are just trying to limit everything we do out in the woods now, it seems like. So we're losing stuff over here left and right, it feels like, and it seems like they're coming for you guys as well.
Yeah, they keep chipping at the bit, that's for sure. Like I say, with our gun rights and everything, they're trying to take that stuff away. But I'm, you know, they always try to do something with animals here in Oregon, but luckily, knock on wood, it hasn't passed yet. But you know that stuff's coming.
Yeah, they seem to continue fighting until they get their way at some point. They don't really ever give up. At least that seems to be the theme anyway.
Oregon's got some strange rules, especially, you know, for big game hunting, period. You know, like it's legal to bait deer and elk, but illegal to bait a predator, which doesn't make no sense to me. It's completely abstract.
I'm with you. I mean, yeah.
So I guess that's how Oregon is. They take care of the predators first, even humans and bears.
Yeah, that's true. So back to the bears. So is there like a time in the day that you feel like you're finding them more consistently? Like, you know, I seem to see them at like 8:30, probably more like 9 to 10 time frame in Idaho. And then obviously like later in the evening, kind of that middle of the day lull seems to happen a lot up there in the high country. But Oregon, you know, can be cool and wet, you know, some days in the spring. Do you tend to kind of see them throughout the day, or do you find yourself catching them more often at certain points?
I think early in the season, you're more apt to see them most all day, you know, because they're basically, I don't know if we really have a hibernation in Oregon, but, you know, they get in that slow funk, kind of walk around, mill around, whatever. But, you know, they're hungry. So they're going to be cruising around pretty much all day to try to find what little bit of grass they can. As the season goes further, typically the last 2 to 3 hours, most likely for me, is usually the best. Usually I get up, if I know the bears are there, which normally they are, I'll get up there and sit there for about 4 or 5 hours, and it'll be the last, you know, 2 or 3 hours of daylight before one will step out. But
yeah. So are you, when you're out there spring bear hunting in Oregon, are you being pretty selective on size and all that stuff? Or are you more of the mindset of just knocking a bear down? Or what are you looking for when you're out there?
So typically I try to find a decent bear, but this is just recently. Before it was, if it was legal, I was shooting at it, you know. But the past couple of years I've been on some pretty giant bears. One bear, I literally chased that bear for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
He finally got shot. It was during a snowstorm, like a whiteout blizzard. And me and my buddy decided to take a different road. And one of the other guys that I know, he wound up shooting it, which, you know, that's hunting. But it was like, man, I had 5 years with that guy, and I wanted him so bad. It was just, it was eating at me. Well, last year I took a young man up bear hunting, and we spotted just another absolute giant. And we hunted him, I think, from April 11th all the way till May 31st. And we wound up only five times. But the vantage point where I could see him from was 1,700 yards away. So we literally would have to spot him, drive clear around the mountain, and hike in on top of him. Hopefully he was still there. Well, four out of the five times, he gave us a slip every time. And then the last time, we walked in there, and we were only there for probably 30 minutes, and he stepped out. And I don't know if the young man that was shooting just got bear fever or what, but he winged it right over his back, and we watched him run away. I was like, no way, because it was only like 390 yards. I was like, oh, this is a done deal. So I set the target knob for him, and he shot. And he's like, man, he said, that bear was so big, he said, it took up the whole scope. And I'm just like, well, how did you miss it, you know? But so this year, you know, last year I didn't have the tag. This year I got it. So I'm being pretty picky with that bear. I'm hoping he comes back. If it comes down to the last little bit of season, I'll probably pull the trigger on something else. Just kind of like you said, you know, just kind of help the get rid of some bears. Cause otherwise, like I say, we're getting overran with them. But I'm going to be picky for the first month and a half. That's for sure.
That's cool. Yeah. It's one thing that's interesting about bears, and I'm far from an expert on bears, but, so Joseph and I, my buddy, we went into an area, it'd be 3 years ago now. And it was our first time in there, big backpack hunt in the wilderness. And took us, I think it was like 6 days before we ended up in this one specific drainage. But in that one drainage, we ended up seeing three or four different bears. And we ended up killing a bear in that drainage the last evening we had of the hunt before we had to get out of there. Which was cool to come down to the wire and pull a bear out of there. But so the following year, we ended up going right back into that same drainage. And those bears we had seen the year before were still in the same, same exact area. It was wild. I could not.
That's usually what I find. If you can see a big mature bear of any kind or any bears, typically they will be back to the same area.
Yeah. Yeah. So we ended up going back in there and, we saw this, like chocolate kind of color phase bear from the year before. And then we saw this pretty nice jet black bear in there. And, I ended up shooting that chocolate bear on the evening of day two, which was the crazy thing about that bear was like he had a bunch of mite, damage to the snout of his face. Like it was like down to bare skin on his snout, which was crazy to see through the spotting scope the first time. And then it was really crazy to see up close after I shot it. But that same evening we had seen that black. So we saw the black bear first and we dropped through this drainage side hill and we came up the other side and that black bear was side hilling in this timber and ended up dropping into the main drainage and we lost it. And then, so we kind of were sitting on like this little rock outcropping. Just, you know, we still had like a couple hours of daylight. So we're just glassing, looking for bears. And that chocolate bear popped out and I ended up killing that one. And then, the following day, we went in there, back in there and Joseph knocked down that black bear. So it was pretty crazy to me to see that they were literally like almost in the same exact spot a year later. Like, so now we're going to go back again this year, but I'm trying to decide like, do we go back to that drainage again, even though that we've knocked down three bears out of there, or do we go somewhere else? Like I would think that those bears had, you know, done their thing with the ladies in there and there's probably more bears around that area, I would assume. But have you had any experience with that? Like killing a few bears in the same drainage and then going back there, or do you usually just move on?
No, I typically hunt the same thing every year.
Really?
Yeah. One drainage, cause we have a lot of, you know, gravel roads and everything. So basically everything you're going to go to is drivable. And there's one spot I usually watch and it sits on a big knob and you can basically probably 260 degrees and nothing but units and everything and the big deep drainages and everything. Yeah, I sat there one day, 11 different bears in that one drainage.
Wow.
Those bears were usually there, not typically the same ones, but you could count on at least a half a dozen bears or more to be there every year.
Wow. Yeah. So that's definitely got me thinking, like, part of me wants to move. Like, there's one huge main drainage and there's a bunch of side drainages that aren't small either that tie into it. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about just bouncing like one ridge over into some new country. But part of me was thinking like maybe there's some more bears in there that we just didn't see. We didn't spend that much time in there. We were done in just a couple of days. So it'll be interesting to see.
It all depends on if there's any hot sows in there. Cause I mean, those boars will come from God knows where to get after that hot sow.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's a fun hunt. I'm really looking forward to it. Plus we always seem to find some pretty cool sheds on that trip, which I don't really ever specifically go out shed hunting. I'm starting to kind of get an itch for it, which is weird, but I've seen all these guys out hiking around picking up browns. And that's one thing I saw on your YouTube channel and some pictures on your Instagram that it looked like you did a little bit of shed hunting. So have you got out at all this year to pick out sheds?
I haven't done too much shed hunting this year. Not normally like I usually do. So my son and my buddy wound up moving to Arkansas. And my son wound up moving out with his fiance. So I was kind of like, well, shit, now what am I going to do, you know? So it kind of put me in the dumps there for a little while. But, you know, I'm kind of coming out of it now. I did a little shed hunting this year. I haven't found too much. But the years prior, you know, it'd be nothing for me to go hike 200 miles for a couple months freaking finding sheds. To me, it's the only thing to do before bear season starts.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Like, it would just be nice to get out and get the legs stretched out and get it back in the mountains looking for animals again. So I guess I'm always looking for a reason to get out there.
And the nice thing about, you know, when I'm blacktail hunting, I know when I'm out there shed hunting, I can kind of see what typically lives in that area. Man, there's a monster shed. Okay, there's got to be a monster buck here somewhere. So I'll go back and look for them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing too about that spring bear hunt we do in Idaho is that same drainage where we killed those bears. The first year we shot that one bear in there and there was a pocket of like 9 or 10 does in the head of that drainage. So the following year we went back in there and killed those two bears. Those deer were in the same damn spot again. I don't know why I thought it was so crazy, but I'm like, those deer are still here. What are the, like, how does that work? Like they winter in the same spot or what?
Yeah, we've had some crazy stuff happen during bear season. I don't know if you guys got e-tagging or anything up there in Washington, but now they put our tagging system on our phone to where basically they can track your whole lifestyle, where you at, I think. But before e-tagging, me and my buddy were up, it was during fall bear, and we had this one unit that just the black caps, wild raspberries or black caps, whatever you want to call them. They were in there so thick, man. It just smelled like a berry pie coming out of that unit. And I kid you not, it was like some Jim Shockey shit. We pull up there and I told my buddy, well, I said, here's a decent bear. So he shoots it and he no longer pulls the trigger. And I look up on the timber line and there's another chocolate bear coming out of the timber. I said, well, how far is it? And all you could see was the top of his head and the bushes and everything. He's all 565. I said, well, all I got's a headshot. He's like, well, send it. So I shot and freaking down he went. We went down to the Idlewild store and bought our Southwest Additional, came back up there, shot two more bears. So now we got four bears down. And there were literally bears in that unit while we were dragging our bears out.
No way.
Yeah, there were 9 bears total.
Holy cow, man. You guys definitely got a bear problem. Holy cow.
It was freaking wild.
Wow.
I'll never forget that.
So speaking of all those bears, I'm curious, have you ever like killed a deer or killed an elk in Oregon and had a bear come in on you guys while you're processing an animal?
Not too much. I haven't had none of that, but I mean, I did have some excitement last year during spring bear when a guy from Instagram, he messaged me, wanting to know if I'd take him bear hunting. He's never killed a bear. So I said, sure. Well, the big bear that I've been chasing after, I wound up spotting him, and we were going to go, I was going to let him shoot it. And he was right above the road, an old decommissioned road right on a bluff. I was like, man, this is perfect, right above the road. And we were literally walking in there, and we looked down in the drainage below us, and there's another bear. And he's like, hey, he's all, can I shoot that bear? I'm like, dude, we need to walk about 70 yards further around the corner and shoot this big one. He's like, yeah, but this one's standing right here. I'm like, you know, if you want to shoot it, go for it. I mean, I ain't gonna, that's one thing about me. I'll never talk anybody down from shooting anything. If, you know,
yeah.
If that's what they want to shoot, then more power to you. So he lays down, touches off, well, hits it a little low. And it's like, oh no. So we hike down in there, and I mean, just nasty bluff, freaking burnt logs. I mean, just everywhere. And we're standing on this rock, and I could hear something. I couldn't tell exactly where it was. Well, this bear wound up going into this big, humongous old growth tree in this little hole. I don't even know how the bear got in there, but wow. Somehow it squeezed its body in there. And I told him, I said, you're going to have to shoot it. He's trying to find it in the scope. He's like, I just can't see it. And I said, okay. I said, I'm going to sneak down there with my pistol. And I said, if that bear comes out of that hole, I said, you better start shooting. And so I get down there, I'm within 3 feet of this hole, and I'm looking in it. All I can see is hair. And I got my pistol up, you know, I'm ready. And about that time, that freaking bear just stuffs his head out of there, and I just triple tap that freaking trigger as fast as I can pull. He looks at me and he's like, man, you're fucking crazy. I was like, dude, somebody had to do it, and I prefer it be me than you. You know?
Oh, well, my gosh.
Wild thing I've ever had happen. I can definitely say I earned a few gray hairs on that one, but. But normally coming on a kill or anything, I have never had them come in on a kill. I mean, usually the next day you can go up there and more than likely there'll be a bear on the gut pile or something. But
yeah, we had so we shot a bull. It's been, I think it was 2021. I shot a small six point in Idaho. And we were over there getting this bull broken down. And I don't know why, but my brother just happened to look up behind us and a black bear came into like 40 yards and it was like hissing at us and slobber and salivate and was coming out of its mouth. And I'm like, what? We have no sidearm. So we were carrying pistols this whole trip, right? And we're on like day 7 by now. We're backpack hunting. We're like 6-7 miles in there off trail, just going through blowdown. Like I'm sick of carrying this pistol. I don't need any more extra weight. We haven't seen a bear. We haven't seen a bear track. We're not in grizzly country. So I leave my pistol back at the teepee. Well, go figure. We kill a bull like at 9 o'clock in the morning and we're breaking this bull down. And my brother looks up and he's like, bear. And I look up and that thing's, you know, like I said, hissing at us and slobbering and going, you know, crazy. And all I have is my bow. I'm like, okay, I guess, we're going to take turns on this elk until our backs are sore and I'm going to stand guard with my bow and then we'll switch on and off. Well, so that bear ended up just like sitting down and I got this all on video. It sat down like 40 yards away and it figured out that eventually we were going to leave. So the bear never like came in and attacked us, but we hung up all the meat in this tree, probably like 50 yards from the carcass. Loaded our packs up with the first loads of the meat that we could get out, like half of the elk. And as soon as we got like 100 yards away from that carcass, that bear came in and he devoured that entire carcass. We came back the following morning with our pistols this time, coming in, you know, all scared, just waiting for that thing to jump out of the bushes at us. And all that was left of that carcass was just a wadded up fur ball that was like this, maybe the size of a watermelon. That didn't touch any of the meat we had hanging in the tree in our game bags. It literally ate the guts. It seemed like it ate the bones. Like there was nothing left of that thing. I was like, man, that was insane. It was quite the experience.
Yeah, he probably drug it off somewhere and buried it.
Yeah, probably. It was
you guys.
Yeah. So, I guess needless to say now I keep my pistol on me for the most part.
Yeah. I definitely don't go anywhere without my pistol anymore. I mean, between the bears and the cougars and now wolves, you know,
yeah.
I don't know what's going to jump on you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's chat about some Roosevelt elk hunting a little bit. is that something that you spend quite a bit of time doing out there in Oregon as well?
I do. Yeah, I do it all. I grew up bow hunting with my brother, and we had the time of our life. You know, when me and him bow hunted together, it seems like we all automatically knew what each other was thinking. And, you know, it was just we had it down to a science. We called in just tons of bulls. I mean, we did kill a lot, you know. I think I only shot one bull and one cow. But man, the over the years of calling in bulls, 20, 30 bulls, and having them just tearing shit up, and it was a rush. And then all of a sudden one day he just quit. He's like, I'm done hunting. I was like, what the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And, so then once he quit, I just kind of quit bow hunting. But my new favorite, well, not new, I've been doing it for quite a while. Muzzleloader hunting for Rosies. That's my favorite. Been lucky enough to, I think this one last year was my ninth bull with a muzzleloader. So it's a blast.
Yeah, I haven't had the chance to hunt Oregon for elk yet, but I always tell people that it's my backup plan, which that sounds bad. It's not a bad backup plan by any means, but Oregon's an over-the-counter state that I feel like is way underrated. People don't have it on their radar for whatever reason, but I've got some buddies that have hunted Oregon for elk, and they talk very highly of the population and the amount of elk they see when they go down there. So one of these years, I'm not going to probably pick up a tag in Montana or Idaho or wherever I apply, and I'm really looking forward to getting down there and chasing Roosevelt's.
Yeah, the absolute coastal range, it holds a lot up. You know, up in the Cascades, doesn't seem to be as nearly the elk population as there was when I was growing up. But, you know, a lot of them, since they quit kind of doing logging and everything up high, a lot of those elk have dropped down into private, you know, private ranches and everything. But coastal range, I mean, to me, it seems like just about every unit you look in, there's going to be elk in it. It's crazy.
Like every clear cut, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I think you guys estimated, I think I see online like 120,000 elk, and Washington's only 60,000. So your guys' herd is pretty much double the size of our elk herd, which is insane to me considering how close together we live. And not to kind of get off topic, but the same with the steelhead, man. I don't know what it is about Washington. We can't manage our steelhead or our elk herds very well. I'm like, they need to go hire some of these guys out of Oregon to take over our fish and wildlife.
Well, I think if it wasn't for the Indians, the Cow Creek Indians that around here, we probably wouldn't have no steelhead either. Because ODF&W has just absolutely annihilated our fish hatchery up by our house. For one, we had the fire, which that killed, I don't know how many, hundreds of thousands of fish. Then the years prior to that, where I salmon fish at, there's a pump in the river that feeds the fish hatchery. Well, it wound up getting plugged up. Well, nobody come and checked it. So all the fish in the pool or the holding tanks got too warm and then just all died. So that was 300 something thousand. And then they killed another 200 something thousand the year before that. And it's like, what the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah.
And, you know, like some of the lower rivers where the Cow Creek tribe takes part in, you know, it's three hatchery steelhead a day. And I mean, there's fish to catch.
Yeah.
So yeah. ODF&W here ain't too good at it either.
Okay. Well, I guess that's good. That's good to know. Not that it would have changed anything in Washington anyway, but it's, I used to have a Clackacraft drift boat, a 16 footer I bought used off Facebook Marketplace. And, before that I had an Aluma Weld sled that I used to fish some bigger rivers with, but I bought that drift boat. And after the first year of owning it, they closed pretty much all of our rivers for steelhead, winter run steelhead. That thing sat in my driveway for about 3 years collecting pine needles and water. And I ended up just selling it last year. And then this year they finally opened it back up. So I was like, I ended up selling my drift boat and I invested some money in some new optics. But I don't know what's going on with our fisheries around here, but man, they're a mess.
we have a lot of winter steelhead that come through. Like I say, just like the dirt roads, you know, I'm 5 minutes from the river, and we'll go up, and we usually go up winter steelhead fishing just to wait for that first salmon to roll in the hole. And then, you know, we'll break out our salmon gear, but we do all bank fishing. So, I mean, 99% of them are all catch and release because they're all wild fish. So we don't have a hatchery program on the North Umpqua where I'm at. But I mean, they're still fun and shit to catch. I mean, me and my boy went up not last year, the year before, and 2 days we caught 28 steelhead. It was the most awesome weekend ever.
Holy cow!
Fast as we could reel them in.
Yeah. Are you guys fishing like under a bobber with jigs or what are you guys running?
I usually run bobber with a jig, tipped with a little piece of prong.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Berkeley power bait or power worms or whatever they're called. I don't know. I think they're like a 6-inch worm.
Yeah.
Hot pink one. They usually bite just about an inch off of it. And that seems to work really good under a bobber also.
Yeah. Yeah, they're so up on the coast on the Hoh and the Solduck and the Klawah and all those rivers way up in Forks, all those ones up there. Those ones have been, they left those ones open, but it's like a 3.5-hour drive for me. So I do make about 3 trips up there a year, usually one in January, one in February, one in March. And those are all wild fish. Like you said, though, we don't bring them home, but they're so fun to catch. And those rivers up there, beautiful. I mean, I think I landed one this year that had to be close to 20. I don't want to exaggerate, but it was huge. I think kicked my ass for probably, I don't know, 30 minutes or so. It was a huge fish. Yeah. And we hooked that under a bobber with a white jig head and a black and yellow worm on there. And it was a good fight.
Yeah, every once in a while, you'll hook into one of them big old brood stock or whatever they call them. But most of them average about 10 pounds, 10, 12, 14 pounds or whatever. But yeah, my brother, he hooked one up there 1 year when we were salmon fishing, and we didn't have no scale or nothing, but anyway, we wound up measuring it, and it was 42 inches long and 18-inch girths, so we figured it right around 20, 21 pounds or something, and that was after, you know, he'd already turned color, and so he wasn't in his prime. If he'd have come up just chrome bright, I guarantee you that'd have been 23, 24-pound fish, easy.
Yeah. And was that from the bank as well?
Yeah.
Oh, that had to be a heck of a fight.
No, yeah. He was hooping and hollering. We were like, you know, what the hell you got on there? Because it wasn't really fighting like a salmon. And he's like, I don't know. He says, now it doesn't feel like anything. And then all of a sudden it'd take a little bit of line. Like, what the hell is this? And it might have been a big steelhead, but it was still cool.
Yeah, I love winter run. It's a good time to get out after hunting season's over, and you know, just something good to pass the time while we wait for fall to come back around.
That's right. Yeah, my wife's always. No, there's no way I can do too much. So when we first got together, you know, I'd duck hunt in December, and then I would winter steelhead in January and through March, and then spring salmon fishing through April and May, and then, you know, obviously spring bear hunting, and then it would go into summer steelhead fishing, and then fall bear hunting, and then deer season. And she's like, you're gonna have to give up something. So I gave up duck hunting. But
yeah, we were talking about that before we hit record. I still don't understand the turkey guys over the spring bear thing. Yeah. I can't make any sense of that one in my head.
I like taking kids or something, but to me they just smell like a freaking drowned rat or something. I don't know. I don't like the smell of them. I don't like the taste of them.
Yeah,
it definitely ain't no butterball. I can tell you that.
That's for sure. So before we hopped on this podcast, on my story I posted that we were going to be recording something, and a couple people asked some questions, and one of them was about trigonosis. Is that something that you worry about with your bears, or is there any steps you take to, you know, be cautious about that? Or do you worry much about that at all?
I honestly, I really don't. My wife, she won't eat it. But you know, just like anything, you know, I make sure it's cooked you know, all the way through. But, you know, of all the bears I've ever shot, I've never, you know, I've shot some bears that I didn't know if I was going to eat because the worms were so bad.
But yeah,
I mean, other than that, you know, I just, I'll eat anything and I ain't died yet. But I mean, it is a thing. So, I mean, definitely cook it, you know, well done.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the pretty much the same process I use just to be safe is make sure it's cooked all the way through. And yeah. I've only killed a couple bears, so I don't have a ton of knowledge on it, but I've done a little bit of homework about it. And I think as long as you make sure you cook it over 165,
yeah,
you should be good. So I just make sure we cook it really well. And I mean, we eat bear on the mountain, you know, render down some fat and make some bear nuggets, and we cook it really thoroughly, like I said, and put a little bit of Montreal or salt and pepper on it, and it's killer.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, you know, they'll ask, well, is it any good? And I'm like, some of the bear that I've shot have been probably some of the best tasting meat I've ever ate. I mean, literally,
yeah,
it's up there past, I mean, some of them might even pass elk and stuff. I mean, I shot this one bear one year in the fall when it was eating strictly nothing but berries. And it had that nice sweet flavor into its meat, and you could absolutely not even tell it was a bear.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's funny you say that. So last year I made brats out of my bear, and you know, just stuffed the casings, and you know, had them in like packages of four that I vacuum sealed, and then I'd pull them out, thaw them out, and throw them on the grill and cook them, you know, just like a brat from the store. And I ended up taking a couple packages over to like a little potluck we had after my son's baseball season ended, his rec league, and I threw them on the grill. And you know, there were a bunch of people there from the league, and you know, everyone was asking me, you know, is that bear meat any good? And I'm like, I'm telling you, just try a bite. Let me cut a sliver of this brat off the grill. And every single person I gave some to was like, oh my God, I cannot believe that's bear. And I'm like, I don't know if they were just being nice, but I'm pretty sure most of them were being genuine, and they were blown away that it was a bear.
Well, I think a lot of it too, people, it's just a mind over matter thing, you know?
Yeah.
I'll take some of my bear grind, and I'll grind it with bacon. You know,
yeah.
Buy a big old box of bacon ends and grind it with. And to me, it's one of the best burgers you'll ever. It's like a bacon burger with no bacon on it. I mean,
yeah.
I've had people, you know, like you said, it blew their mind that was a bear. They're like, oh, I thought it was beef. You know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's really good. Another thing I like to make with it is breakfast sausage, you know, throw a little breakfast sausage blend in there, and then yeah, make up breakfast burritos with some onions and jalapenos and some sour cream and some cheese. And that's pretty good too.
I'm starting to make me hungry.
it's dinner time. That's for sure. Well, man, I've had you on for almost an hour already, and it's getting late on a work night. So I just want to thank you again for hopping on and chatting hunting with me.
Well, I appreciate it, man. It was fun.
Yeah, I'm glad I had a good time too. We'll have to stay in touch. And like I always tell the guests that come on, I would love to catch back up with you maybe after the season, talk about some hunting stories from 2025, or even maybe hop on after spring bear season ends in the summertime and catch up on how your spring bear season went.
Sounds good. Hopefully. Well, you'll know if I send you a picture of that 400 pounder laying in the dirt. So.
Yeah. Please send me a picture, man. I'd love to see them. Blacktails, elk sheds, deer sheds. I'd love to see them.
That sounds good. I will do.
All right, man. Well, you have a good night.
All right. You too.